It's time for Truth About Markets with Max and Stacy on Residence 104.4 FM right here. Hey, George Galloway is leading the polls, according to one poll for the London radio station. You see that?
Amazing. That's amazing.
Oh, wow. That's Obama. You were amazed by Obama's rendition of Amazing Grace? For those of you who might not know, Obama refers to Barack Obama. He's the president of the United States.
Yes. So I was watching that live. You were up in Holloway doing some live stand-up thing, and I tuned in to the live feed from the Reverend Pinckney's funeral at the, that historical black church in Charleston where 9 people were gunned down in a racist crime. Well, the first black president of the United States of America gave the eulogy, and it was pretty amazing. It was back in form. Like, we haven't really seen him speak like that since 2007, 2008, as he was running for president. And then he broke out in song, and it was like watching it live. It was a pretty shocking moment. You were like, "No way, no way, no! This is not happening. The president of the United States is not singing." And then he broke out into that sort of Methodist preacher, Baptist preacher, sort of reverend speaking talk. So that was a pretty remarkable moment on a very remarkable day, because it's also a day where the Greeks. Alex Tsipras announced he was having a referendum for Greece, whether they want to take this new deal or not. And what else happened yesterday? Oh, the SCOTUS, the Supreme Court, ruled that gay marriage is legal across the entire U.S., that you can't ban it. And so it was a pretty big day.
Yeah, it's funny because I tweeted that there was a bank run in Greece based on the photos coming out of the ATMs have now run out of money, and there's a lot of people waiting. And I got some tweets back saying there's no bank run in Greece. It's another example of how people, when it comes to the financial reality, it's the hardest to accept because until you go to the machine and there's no cash. You just your mind doesn't want to process that information. It's too horrifying. And so people in Greece, hopefully a year ago when we told them to move everything into gold, silver, and Bitcoin, they did. They're about to now, looks like anyway, bank holiday coming up on Monday. They got a referendum on July 6th. Looks like the population is really hates Germany. There's it's pretty, I guess it's going to be a close vote. What do you think about this referendum? How's it going to come out?
Well, first of all, the referendum is on July 5th, which is next Sunday, and Alex Tsipras has, they're at the end of the negotiations, and what they have on the table is basically the Troika wants more austerity on the pensions. So, however, he was elected on a mandate of no more austerity, but also on the mandate of stay in the euro. So, as we have discussed on Kaiser Report, that's an impossible mandate because you can't have both. So he's throwing it back into the voters' court. They have to decide whether or not they want which one of the two is more important, because they're voting for the austerity or against it. And if they vote against it, and he's told them that he thinks they should vote no. If they vote no, then they'll be out of the euro. If they vote yes, they'll stay in the euro. But I don't know if that's possible, because the problem is that there is a bank run, and it has been going on since November, so there might not have been a sudden amount of queues, out at the ATMs, but there were a lot of people that once Tsipras announced this at like midnight last night, they started taking out cash from the machines. But there's been like 50 billion euros or more taken out from the banks since November, so people have already been taking it out. If you had 50 billion taken out in one day, that would be quite noticeable. But they have been doing a billion a day in the last few in the last 2 or 3 weeks, so it's been escalating rapidly. So that is an essentially a bank run. Now it's really up to the pensioners, because a lot of the young people have already left, and those that are there, 70% of them, 68% of them are unemployed. The young people have nothing to lose in terms of jobs, because they would have probably more jobs if they could go back to the drachma. On the other hand, if they exit the euro, then they wouldn't be able to come to the UK or other parts of the Europe where there might be jobs. And in terms of the pensioners, they're the ones that really don't want to leave the euro because they receive their pensions in euros and they don't want to receive the pensions in drachmas. But they need young people to be able to work in order to pay the taxes to pay their pensions. So it's a very confusing situation. It will be interesting to see what happens. In the meantime, on Monday, right now, Greece is surviving on emergency liquidity funds from the ECB. So everybody's saying, assuming that the ECB is going to withhold those from Monday, which means there will be there will have to be a bank holiday. We'll see.
Right. So, there was a poll in Greece recently asking if you want to be in the euro. And I think 70% said they wanted to be in the euro.
Yeah.
So that would indicate that they would, in this referendum, vote to accept the Troika agreement. And then that's kind of so same way Scotland had a chance to become independent and they voted.
But 70% of them also don't want austerity. So this is what that they want another huge cut to pension funds, which are already the pensions are already down something like 40-45% since the beginning of these measures. So they want another like huge chunk cut from the pensions. So they want two things.
But my point being that people equate being in the euro with some status. So the same way poor people would spend their last $2,000 in the world on rims for their car for the status. They would go hungry if they had nice rims, chrome rims on their car. The Greek people could very easily be sucked into this idea, we want the status of being in the euro. We're willing to lose everything, our sovereignty, our dignity, our rights to be in the euro. So that's the human nature is such they could go that way.
Well, and also, the reason why is as well is not only are their pensions paid in euros, but what they want is the lower interest rates on their loans in order for companies to borrow more at a cheaper rate. But the fact is, they deserve a higher rate.
This idea of, okay, we'll vote at the referendum to stay in, you're assuming that the Troika will honor their deal, which I think is foolish. Why would you assume that the Troika is going to honor the deal when they've broken every deal, every promise, every treaty so far in the process? It's like the Indians in America believing the white man going to honor their treaty this time, and then they broke something like 4,000 treaties in a row. I mean, the Troika has never honored a treaty. Why would they start honoring a treaty? But again, human nature is such that the pseudo status of being in the euro might fool enough people to vote yes.
Well, if they vote yes, then there's going to be another election because Alex Tsipras is putting his name behind no. And if they don't vote no, then he's going to call another snap election.
Right.
So they're going to have to go for a party that will do the austerity and stay in the euro.
Yeah. Well, but people have a real difficult time thinking through their interest beyond the next ham sandwich. It's just, people don't tend to think, have any kind of ability to think more than just 2 or 3 hours in front of their face, especially if there's panic and there's chaos. I mean, the great thing about having a constitution and the rule of law and guaranteed paid vacations is that you have a population that actually can think more about the future and plan and create in technologies and industries and do good things. But if you have an uneducated population that's under stress, that's starving to death, they're just going to, the mob psychology takes over and they do the worst thing for themselves. And you have there's more risk of martial law at this point in Greece than there is. They're going to go back to the junta. Forget the Troika. Bring back the junta.
Well, one thing I was thinking is one of the big topics of discussion this past week about Greece is that they still haven't managed to, chase up the tax evaders. And nobody pays taxes there as part of the problem. But they have, these pensions that nobody wants to cut, but somebody has to pay for them, but nobody's willing to pay for them. There's no tax revenue. So the one thing that the U.S. is still good at is the IRS manages to chase everybody down all over the world. And, You think they could probably outsource it to the IRS if they're unwilling or unable to do it themselves.
I guess, I mean, they have that doesn't seem like the situation. Like, I mean, they're going into a failed state status. Plus, all the immigrants are coming in. They go to Greece first because it's right near where all the immigrants are coming from.
The migrants, yeah.
And so that's going to only escalate, and there's going to be no ability to manage that. And then, so once Greece goes under, well, one way or another, it's going into a failed state. So then the speculators, their next target will be either France or Italy. So you think might be France might be the next domino to fall.
Well, France is the biggest one, but Italy might be the next one to go. Like I said before on the show, is like we did. I used to work for a company that did a load of deals all around the world, and Italy devalued their currency all the time, and like every 3 months at one point, and then we had to renegotiate contracts, and they haven't had that luxury now for the last 15 years. So you wonder what they've been doing, and they have equivalent in terms of youth unemployment, very close to what Greece has. And if you have youth unemployment at that rate, then you have not only high social welfare costs, but you have no tax revenue coming in, and on the other, they're also being hit with all those migrants escaping all the wars of the UK, US, and France. So, and the climate change refugees from Africa. So, we're all of these themes that you and I have been discussing for the past 10 years here on Resonance 104.4 FM, the best radio station in the world, right out of London. Well, all the themes from climate change to financial liquidity issues, debt problems, all of them are coming together in one big catastrophe now going forward. We have, somebody posted a link to the chart of the 5-year Shanghai index, and it has gone absolutely parabolic in the last 12 months that you just can't believe that. You very rarely in history see these sort of charts. That index, house prices, well, it's up 100% in the past 12 months. The property prices in San Francisco are up 107% in the last 12 months. So there's a parabolic sort of movement going on around the world, and I think it's all like there's a sort of sense that stuff is going to get crazy.
Well, it was going parabolic until about a week ago.
Yeah.
And then the Chinex, which is the Chinese Nasdaq, dropped 19% in the last week. So
that's
it's
pretty bad.
yeah, so it's having a lot of trouble. It looks like that's going to go the way of the way Nasdaq blew up in 2000, and Nasdaq dropped 80%, and $5 trillion was wiped out. And so it looks like you've got something going on in the Chinese Nasdaq. And let's see, the China's financial system. So, China looks like the parabolic move is getting ready, is already coming unglued. So since the global financial system is all connected on the back end, that means that we're going to see some contagion.
Now, you and I on Kaiser Report covered the fact that just only 2 weeks ago, before the collapse in the Shanghai market, it's still up like a, over, you know, like over 80% in the past 12 months. But the fact is that when it was up 100%, all the wealthy and the so-called on paper wealthy investors were withholding actual real world purchases like cars and houses, they said, because the reason why was because their money was working better in the markets. It was the rise was so rapid that they didn't want to lose out on that. So now, of course, they have lost out way more than the Jaguar they were holding back on in terms of how much the markets have collapsed. If we have that, we if we if Greece has a bank run on and a bank holiday on Monday, and on top of this we have the China situation. But I think a lot of the parabolic markets all around the world is. You know, that's part of the inflation, as we've talked about, from not only QE at home, but the QE also causes inflation in China, which China doesn't want to go in the food prices because, of course, it causes the peasants to rise up and they can't deal with 1.3 billion people storming Beijing. So they send it overseas, and that's led to all these house price bubbles, which, you know, Westerners like. So that has, you know, but it's going to cause destabilization as when all of this thing falls apart.
Yeah, well, yeah, no, the other problem is that the you know, clues toward this massive reinflation of a bubble after 2008, it took 7 years for it to form. So in the first 2 years, you talk about it, and people are like, wow, that's interesting. And then they forget about it by year three. By year four, five, and six, they're already, well, sucked into the mania that is the new bubble, and thought of what that might mean or have been repressed into the deepest, furthest reaches of the mind, and as just basically deleted. So now we're at that phase where there's a new generation. 7 years is a long time. So 7 years ago, people who were just reaching puberty are just now in their early 20s. So they're just coming of age. And so they don't even know what happened during puberty because they were obsessed with their puberty. They don't know that there was a global financial crisis. They have no idea. So now they're 20, 21 years old. All they know during their teens and early 20s is a huge global boom market. Now there's a crash, and then they're like, where did this come from? Who's responsible? How did this happen? Why didn't you tell me? This is came out of nowhere. Why weren't we warned? Well, you know, this is, it happens every 7 years, so it's time for the next reality moment.
There's also been another huge wobble in the bond markets in the past 2 or 3 days. So that's the one to really look forward to, because that is at a 350, sometimes 400-year high. I mean, these are... I think somebody said not since the Black Plague, you know, have bond prices been so low. I mean, yields been so low and bond prices so high. So they wobbled again. But of course, it's also hitting the problem is that all of the central banks have been buying all their bonds. So there's no liquidity in the bond market, which is causing, you know, when there's movement in the small amount that is able to be traded, it's often panicky and jittery. And we covered on Kai's report this week, we covered the fact that it was General Electric, I think, or Boeing, one of these like huge Fortune 500 sort of companies, one of these S&P 500 companies. Their gap in their pension fund increased by 70%. In the past year, even though they, you know, they increase the amount of money they poured into it in order to close the gap in the pension fund, instead it's still expanded by 70%, and part of it, well, almost all of it, is caused by the 0% interest rates. So they're confronting all their as the baby boomers start to retire more and more rapidly, they're hitting those costs of. The baby boomers have what are called defined pension guaranteed benefits. So nobody under them has those sort of benefits, but these guys have those benefits, and now they're having to pay them. And they were forecasting 8% returns on their pension funds. But obviously they made those projections when interest rates averaged 5%, which was standard. So it wasn't that much harder to make the extra 3% in the stock market and things like that. But now with interest rates at, you know, 1%, they are losing a lot of money.
Yeah, a lot of pension funds put into their funds 30 years ago a 30-year treasury bond that paid 10% U.S. government treasury bond. U.S. government treasury bonds at one point were paying 16%. So 30 years ago, they put those bonds in there. And they assume, based that these returns going forward are going to be 8%, enough to cover the pensions that are due in 10, 20, 30 years. So here we are, 30 years later, and those 30-year bonds are maturing, so they need to be reinvested. So you look out into the market, and what's the 30-year bond paying now? It's paying 2%, not 10%, 8 or 10%. That's a 70, 80, 90% loss. and therefore they are not going to be able to pay folks their pensions. The pensions, anyone who was living on government treasury bills that were for 10, 20, 25 years, they were averaging a 5% yield. Then, under financial repression, under 2008, under Hank Paulson and
Jack Lew.
Jack Lew, they forced rates, financial oppression, down to basically 0%. So you went from getting 4, 5, 6 thousand a month in your dividend income to 50, 60 bucks. And now that is happening to the longer term pensions. The corporate pensions are now going to have their moment of realization that, wait a minute, rates are near zero. They're not 8, 9, 10%. So they can't pay them. So a lot of people, the whole pension system that came into effect after World War II is being wiped out. All that money was essentially forced into the present and used to speculate, to give it, take hundreds of millions and billions that would have been in a pension account of somebody in their 50s, 60s, and 70s, and 80s, give it to Warren Buffett so that he can buy huge companies, stakes in huge companies, so that Warren Buffett's pension account is 60, 70 billion. But that means that millions of people have to go without. I'm not sure it's a good trade-off.
Yeah, and in the meantime, compared to 30 years ago, we have more and more nonstop wild boom and bust, boom and bust, boom and bust. And in that time, of course, everybody has had to move to 401ks, where you're investing your own money in the stock market instead of the safety, alleged safety of bonds. And so, the randomness of these booms and busts. So investing, if all that money's going in at these sort of massive multiples, I read somewhere, by the way, that the Shanghai market is something like 246 times earnings. That's what it trades at.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, the average, long-term average is 15.
Yeah.
So that's quite a gap. And, the images from China are classic bubble images of people in their fruit stands hooked up to computers and trading S&P futures while they're selling apples on the street. And, that's the old cliche, really, of the shoeshine boy trading stock tips at 1929 before the crash. I think it was somebody famous, a famous speculator who sold everything before the crash of 29, who was quoted as saying, "When I got a stock tip from my shoeshine boy, I went into the office and sold everything." Then, sure enough, a few weeks later, the market crashed. And so you have that kind of behavior. Everyone, bull markets create an enormous plethora of geniuses. And there's an old saying, never confuse brains with a bull market. But, people, they make, they just, it's a self-feeding delusion. And same thing with property. Property in London, so-called property ladder, it's been for 20 years, it's been a cash machine, but it's not sustainable. And as a matter of fact, prices in London, Stacey, in the high end, are now down sharply. So is this the beginning of a massive London real estate correction? If so, many tears to follow.
Yes, and it was Joe Kennedy who said that. He said, "You know it's time to sell when shoeshine boys give you stock tips. This bull market is over." He had warned he had told somebody he warned somebody in the 1920s about that. So yeah, the high end is down. Property prices across the UK, across London, are still up 10% in the year. But that's at the bottom because, of course, those people are always the last to figure it out. But at the top end, the 5 million pound plus, and that could be because of Russians and the sanctions there. It could be because of the Chinese. The Chinese have been the big, huge buyers of all of these properties. But like that guy that we covered on Kai's report, who wasn't buying a Jaguar because he was putting his money to work in the market. It could be that it's Chinese investors withholding while the market was rising so rapidly, parabolically in China. So we'll never know. And by the way, as this market has gone parabolic in China, it was only 2 or 3 weeks ago, right before the crash in China that's happened over the past 2 weeks, right before the crash, U.S. investors, mom and pop investors, were able to start buying Chinese, mainland Chinese shares.
Mm-hmm.
So all those Chinese are quite clever, maybe. They found the greater fools in America to dump these shares onto.
Well, they were opening up like a million accounts a day in China.
Yeah.
Retail investors. Mm. This reminds me of a couple of things. Obviously, with America Online, people were able to buy stock in America Online when the internet developed the browser of Netscape, and they had their dial-up service, America Online. So America Online stock had a multiple of probably 60, 70, or 100, and they were so fat, they bought Time Warner. Mm. And then Time Warner, and then the whole thing collapsed by more than 90%. But there was the people online, they got online, they got their browser, they ordered their America Online, they're paying 10 or 15 bucks a month for America Online, and wow, I can buy stock in America Online? Great. And so that created what I call a feedback of narcissism, that you're buying what it is you're seeing to buy what it is that you're seeing. And this is a very dangerous situation. So Chinese people, they get online, they narcissistically are buying stock because they believe that because they're online, it must be because they're geniuses and the stock market is, you know, it just is a self-feeding narcissistic loop of psychosis, which this is one of the most dangerous types of bubbles ever when it's driven by millions. It's a tulip bulb, had a similar thing. A tulip bulb had a value of 50 cents. But during the tulip bulb mania in the 1600s, I believe it was, the tulip bulb became worth, one bulb became worth the same as a house in Holland, or two houses. And then suddenly people said, yeah, you know, that's probably a stupid idea, isn't it? And there's a crash by 99%. So I think this generally is a tulip bulb moment.
Well, that article I was talking about that we covered on Kaiser Report, where they were talking about the Chinese investors going crazy in the stock market and withholding purchases in the real world because they want to keep their money at work in the market. They interviewed one guy who was buying one of the mainland Chinese companies. Their shares were trading in mainland China where he was allowed to buy. And instead, he was buying it in Hong Kong, on the Hong Kong Stock Exchange, where it was trading at a premium of 12%. So he could have bought the same exact share for 12% discount, but he wanted the one that was higher.
That's clearly tulip bulb mania, where they're both tulip bulbs, but you're buying the one that's more expensive because it's more expensive. So
it's the exact same company, the exact same. You're owning a chunk of this exact same company, but you see it's a gambling mentality.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. This is not a good sign. This is not a good sign at all.
I mean, that's not a, I mean, would you pay, would you find a t-shirt you like a lot and it's £10 here and you go, oh, wait, I found it over there in the other shop for £12.50. I'm going to get it over there instead, the same exact
one. You know, maybe it's a Beanie Baby where suddenly in 10 years' time they're worth a lot, but these are just worthless pieces of paper, not even something you can play with. Anyway, it's time to go. Bye, y'all.
That's it for this episode of The Truth About Markets on Residence 104.4 FM.
Bye, y'all.